The limits of power for Democrats have been on display this week, first with the confirmation of Betsy DeVos as education secretary, despite a huge amount of opposition, and then last night when Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren was silenced on the Senate floor by the Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Meanwhile, the protests by the left against President Trump continue. But how can Democrats harness that energy and turn it into power? Joining us now is Guy Cecil, a Democratic strategist and chairman of the pro-Hillary Clinton super PAC Priorities USA. Guy, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, why do you think at this point, now that there a few months have gone by, why do you think that Hillary Clinton lost the election?
Well, I think there's probably more than one reason whenever you lose an election by 70,000 votes across three states. And, you know, one can certainly acknowledge that the activities from the FBI director over the last week were not helpful to the cause. But ultimately, I think at the end of the day, it was still a change election, that there were a lot of people around the country who were still hurting financially from the economic crisis from 2008. They hadn't seen their wages rise. They hadn't seen the type of economic opportunity that they expect for themselves and for their kids, and ultimately decided that they wanted to move into a different direction. And I think that's highlighted by the fact that Donald Trump was still unpopular with many of these folks. They were simply willing to take the risk just to have change at almost any cost. And ultimately, he was a good messenger for that in a way that Hillary just couldn't be.
And also, there were a number of people who just didn't vote for Hillary Clinton who had voted for President Obama.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at two factors that really took place, first of all, you did have millions of people who voted for President Obama who then went on to vote for President Trump. No question, these voters in many cases voted for Trump for the same reason they voted for President Obama, which I know sounds crazy, but ultimately they wanted change. They wanted change in Washington. They wanted change with the establishment. They wanted their lives to get better. And the second group are folks that simply just didn't turn out to vote. And I do think that a big part of the reason for that was they simply thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. When you looked at the public polling, when you looked at the coverage of the race, when you looked the way newspapers, radio, television all cover the race, most of them covered it as if it was fait accompli. And ultimately, I think it discouraged a lot of folks from turning out.
But isn't that the job of people like you, political strategists? And we see them all the time right before the election, always saying, even if the polls look like something is going to happen, they always say, oh, but, you know, we can't take it for granted. People still have to get out and vote. So you're saying that the media narrative was just so strong that Hillary Clinton looked like she was going to win that people thought that they didn't have to go out and vote.
Yeah, I certainly don't think it was the only factor, but simply that it was a factor. And I think going forward, especially as you're looking to the 2018 elections, where midterm elections have, at least in recent history, been a real challenge for Democrats, we need to rethink how we're engaging people at every level and making sure that we are reigniting, you know, the old way of knocking on doors and making phone calls, making sure that we're doing all that we can to connect with people where they live, where they work, where they worship. That is the only way we're going to be successful. And it's frankly, you know, despite being discouraged by the outcome of the election, it's a reason to be optimistic in the sense that we've seen over the last couple of months an enormous amount of enthusiasm. And now the challenge for Democrats is how do we take that enthusiasm and how do we turn it into electoral power over the next 2 years? Because the number one thing we can do as Democrats to make sure we defeat Donald Trump is win in 2017 and win in 2018.
Well, one of the things that we have seen is these protests that have been happening, people, Democrats, calling representatives to try to get their point across, showing up at meetings. But as we see that, and it does appear to be an organic movement, who should the leader be right now? Is the leader of the left Nancy Pelosi, or is it Chuck Schumer, or who is it?
I don't think we need to have a leader right now. Honestly, I think that part of the beauty of what's happening around the country is that you have groups like the organizers of the Women's March, a group of former congressional staffers who formed a organization called Indivisible, which has led to hundreds, if not thousands, of small community meetings and town halls. You have dial-up campaigns, the three largest phone days in the history of the United States Congress have happened in the last week. All of these things have been happening because of grassroots enthusiasm. And I think Democrats should spend some time over the next few months not focused on what organization or what single person is going to lead, or frankly, even what person is going to be the chairman of the DNC. And we should be more focused on how we empower and harness the energy and enthusiasm that is happening in cities and towns across the country. And so I'm less concerned about who is the singular leader of the party and more interested in how do we continue to harness this enthusiasm over the next 2 years leading into the elections.
Should it be the Democrats' plan to oppose everything that Trump and the Republicans want to do, to be obstructionists like the Republicans were when President Obama was in the White House? Or do they lose credibility by doing that because they were very much against it when the Republicans were doing it to them?
Well, I think in some respects this is a false choice because we haven't seen much from the Trump administration that most Americans would actually agree with. And so when you are nominating someone for United States Attorney General who has engaged in what could be kindly called racist behavior, or you have a Secretary of Education nominee who doesn't know basic tenets of public education, or you have a president who is in support of a Muslim ban, then yes, I think Democrats should be unanimous in their opposition to Trump when it comes to Medicaid block grants, when it comes to cutting ACA. I mean, there hasn't been much effort on the part of Donald Trump or the Republicans to reach out to Democrats to find common sense solutions. And until that happens, we should oppose them at every chance we get.
What about with the Supreme Court pick, Neil Gorsuch?
Well, again, I think when you look at his record, whether it comes to issues around choice or marriage equality, the fact of the matter is that he does not represent most of Americans. And we're appointing someone to a lifetime appointment to the bench. I hope that Democrats will strongly insist on a 60-vote margin, and I hope they oppose him. This is not the type of person we want on the bench.
As you look forward to 2020 and the point when a Democrat will run against President Trump, do you think that that person should be somebody from outside of Washington, should be a non-politician, run a non-politician against a non-politician?
Honestly, I've tried to avoid all conversation about 2020 because I think part of the problem that we have as Democrats is an obsession with winning the presidential race that frankly has blinded us from what have been historic losses at the state legislative and governor and congressional level that we must address in a systemic way. But there's no question that looking to 2020, whether it's someone that happens to be in office from Washington, D.C. or happens to be at a state capitol, we need to look to the future in finding fresh leadership for our party. And frankly, the most important thing from my perspective is someone that can present a comprehensive message about what it means to be a Democrat, what it means to be a modern day Democrat that is about more than just ticking off demographic boxes or becoming a confederation of the aggrieved, that can deliver a strong economic message without walking away from our commitment to equality and justice. And I think the person that can find the way to that is going to be successful, whether they've been in elective office in D.C. or in a state capital around the country.
And how are you going to deal with members of your base in the party who often, in election after election, try to equate the Democrat who doesn't agree with them on everything with the Republican who doesn't agree with them on almost anything, and then decide, as we saw in this last election, that they don't even want to show up and vote?
Well, look, our success, particularly in the United States Senate in the 2018 elections, is dependent in part on states that voted strongly for Donald Trump. And I think we're going to have to find a way to be welcoming to folks in our party who occasionally have disagreements with us, even when we feel strongly about our beliefs. You know, the fact of the matter is that there is unanimity inside the Senate caucus 90% of the time. And so if we're going to win in places like Montana or North Dakota or Ohio, we have to understand that those places are different than in places like Massachusetts or Connecticut. And we're going to have to build a party that is big enough and strong enough to welcome people who occasionally disagree with us. In order for us to be successful in the Senate, in order to prevent the Republicans from having a filibuster-proof majority in 2018, we're going to need a party that's big enough to welcome all types of Democrats to the table.
And is that the fight in 2018 to keep it from being a filibuster-proof majority, or do the Democrats actually have a chance of taking back the Senate?
I think taking back the Senate would be a challenge only because there are so few Republican seats that are actually up for grabs. You're probably looking at a couple of seats in particular, Nevada and Arizona, where you have a chance to pick up. But really, we are playing to defend the enormous gains that we made in 2012. And I think that stands in stark contrast to, for example, with governor's races, where I think Democrats have a huge opportunity to pick up a half dozen or more governor seats around the country and hopefully also pick up some state legislative chambers.
That's Guy Cecil, who is a Democratic strategist and chairman of the Super PAC Priorities USA. Guy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.